Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Julian Story Aviation Podcast.
So here we are. It's episode 4 of the Julian Story Aviation Podcast. If you enjoy these podcasts, don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. Also, if you could take the time to leave a rating and maybe even a review, it really helps people find the podcast. As we start to very slowly emerge from the chaos caused to the aviation industry by the coronavirus pandemic, we're starting to get quite a few inquiries from prospective clients who are considering buying their own private jet. Airline route networks have been slashed, people are worried about catching the virus on an airliner, and I think that the industry is going to experience something of a mini boom, much like it did after 9/11. My standard answer to anyone thinking about buying their own aircraft is that there is literally only one good reason not to. And that's that you can't afford it. But some of these people's enthusiasm for aircraft ownership seems to be being somewhat tempered by a sort of nagging guilt about the harm they've been told that this might do to the environment. Joining me now is the author of a fantastically well-researched book called Watermelons, which I think that literally everybody should read. He's a chap called James Dellingpole, and he's going to explain why private jet ownership probably won't kill any polar bears. James, hi.
Hello, Julian.
Hello.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you very much for doing this. Really appreciate it.
So, my task today is to persuade potential purchasers of private jets that you're not going to be destroying the planet if you buy one. Is that right?
Absolutely right. One of the things that people have been mentioning to me when they've been weighing up whether or not they should get a jet is they have this sort of nagging doubt that somehow buying it makes them a bad person or that it'll kill some polar bears. And as you and I both know, that's complete rubbish.
Yes, I would say that it is a classic affliction, particularly of the kind of class of people who are able to afford private jets. And I have nothing against these people. I think it's splendid that they've made their money, and I think it's splendid that they want to spend it on making their air travel less miserable, because God knows private jets are so much more fun. Yeah. But the reason I say it's characteristic of those kind of people is that when people have made a lot of money, they tend to look for reasons to feel guilty about themselves. It's just a kind of a luxury of having, you know, time to think about the world, and people start beating themselves up and wondering whether they really deserve it. And one way this manifests itself is eco-guilt. And it's not surprising, given that if you look at the kind of, you look at how the charities world works, for example, in America, this is especially true, that there are lots of organizations like the Nature Conservancy, like the Sierra Club, which target the very rich and guilt trip them into thinking that they are somehow responsible for destroying the environment, and that as a consequence of this, they ought to pay a form of Danegeld to the environmental movement, in the form of you know, campaigning for the Sierra Club or giving them massive amounts of money or whatever. All I can say, first of all, before I go on, is that I care about nature at least as much as any greenie I have ever met. Probably more.
Me too. Absolutely.
I was brought up by my dad was a very keen amateur naturalist, and we used to travel all over the world, not by private jet, unfortunately, collecting. Well, our particular hobby was collecting reptiles and amphibians. So we went as far as the Seychelles, to this remote island where this kind of skink was found. This skink is only found on two islands in the world, and okay. We brought some of those back and bred them successfully in the UK. I love wild swimming. I love walking in nature. So, you know, nobody try and lecture me that I am unworthy to live on the planet and that I am a destroyer. It's just an unfortunate fact of our existence that we, of course, are going to have some kind of environmental footprint. It's inevitable to have an environmental footprint. Yeah,
absolutely.
Of course it is. So it's a trade-off. And I totally agree that we have a duty to look after the planet and as best we can preserve it for future generations, which is what we're largely doing. I mean, our environmental footprint today is far, despite the expanding population, is far, far smaller than it was, say, a century ago or at the height of the Industrial Revolution, that they were much less pollution conscious in those days. And it is, by the way, a function of prosperity. There's something called the environmental Kuznets curve, which suggests that until a nation's per capita income reaches a certain point, I think it's about something quite small, like $11,000 a year, or maybe I've got that slightly wrong.
Okay.
But up until that point, countries cannot afford to care about the environment. They're just busy trying to stay alive.
Yeah.
After that, as we get richer, we get much, much better at things, doing stuff like putting catalytic converters into car engines to strip out all the nasty stuff, ensuring that the stuff that comes out of power stations has had all its nasty stuff removed. So it's not as though we live in a world which doesn't care about the environment. I suppose my beef with the environmental movement is that it misdirects.
Yep.
It exaggerates certain problems and ignores or underestimates other ones. So I'm bothered by issues that are real, like overfishing in yep. certain parts of the world,
yep.
The depletion of water tables, the destruction of, I mean, this is extraordinary, the destruction of forests in America to create wood chips to be burned in power stations in England in order to create so-called renewable energy.
Some sort of green electricity.
It's very, very dodgy. And in fact, Michael Moore, who I'm normally not a fan of, but has just produced this fantastic documentary which details the damage that is being done by environmentalism to the planet in the form of renewable energy, particularly. So wind turbines, solar farms, all of these things which apart from making the landscape much, much uglier, also do tremendous damage, like chopping up birds and bats in the case of wind turbines,
yeah.
And frying birds in the case of solar arrays. So I suppose that I'm coming at this from the point of view of somebody who really cares about nature,
yep.
is very concerned that the narrative that we are fed about the environment by green groups, by money-grubbing green groups, is not actually representative of the truth.
I think you're absolutely right.
But part of the problem is that it took me a whole book to explain why I think this, the reasons that I have for thinking this. It's not like one of the problems with the environmental movement, which is one of the most powerful movements in the world today. One of the problems with it is that it cannot be refuted in one or two simple punchy slogans. I mean, it specializes in punchy slogans itself, but that's the problem with it, that it is essentially a movement of the emotions rather than of the facts,
yep.
of evidence. So when you look, for example, at evidence to support the claim that man-made carbon emissions well, they see there I am using the enemy's terms. It's not carbon emissions, it's carbon dioxide emissions. Carbon, yep. carbon is black stuff. That carbon dioxide is a harmless,
it's a compound,
harmless, yep, trace gas. Yeah. So there's the evidence that anthropogenic, i.e. man-made CO2 emissions are damaging the planet in an unprecedented way is simply non-existent.
Yeah.
Which is to say that it exists only in computer modeled projections, which are not a reflection of any kind of reality. They're a reflection rather of the algorithms that are programmed into these models and the data that's fed into these models. And the data that's fed into these computer models is often unreliable. It's, yep, often been adjusted,
yep,
by party pre-activist scientists who are not acting with the... Charles Darwin said that a scientist ought to have a heart of ice.
Yep.
That in other words, you shouldn't prejudge your experiments. You should just observe the data and draw your conclusions accordingly. Because if you do that, then you're not going to be led into groupthink. You're not going to be fooled. I mean, you're certainly not going to get your scientific breakthrough if you just go along with what everyone declares is established science. And there
Absolutely
are
right.
countless examples, yep, of this through history. So the narrative is pushed aggressively by, not least by, the renewables lobby, which stands to make a lot of money out of this via taxpayer subsidies. The narrative goes that man-made carbon emissions are warming the planet at an unprecedented and catastrophic rate.
Yep.
And that unless we act now, or preferably by yesterday,
in a drastic
then the
way.
World is going to... Yeah, yeah. There is simply no evidence to support this.
No.
One thing, it is not unprecedented. There have been rises as steep and as fast in global mean temperature,
yep,
insofar as one can calculate such a thing. I mean, obviously, it's a chaotic system, and how do you know? It depends on where you measure and how many measuring points you've got, which of course, the world's a big place. You can't get comprehensive coverage. But that's by the by.
Yep.
The world has, it seems, from past records, warmed at least as rapid a rate and dramatic a rate in pre-industrial periods, which would suggest that the connection between human CO2 emissions and global warming doesn't tell us the full story, because in the past, before we were flying around in private jets and jumbo jets, and before we were driving everywhere in cars and stuff, before that time, even then, the planet was capable of warming and cooling at a rapid rate over a period of years.
Yeah. Well, I remember as a young boy, I remember the big fear then was that we were heading for another ice age. Do you remember that?
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it, that there are, for example, I think issues of, there was a cover of Time magazine warning that the next ice age was imminent. And what the current climate alarmist establishment has quite successfully done is they've airbrushed this out of history. They've almost gone so far as to deny that anyone ever said this thing.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't support their narrative that the science is settled and that the science knows what's happening.
Yeah.
Because clearly, if scientists in the 1970s hadn't a bloody clue,
yeah,
what does that say about
yeah,
modern scientists?
Absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah, carry on.
No, sorry. I was just going to say, on the subject of carbon dioxide, of all of the anthropogenic carbon dioxide, aviation in the whole world, and that's every airliner, every aircraft you can think of, only produces 2% of anthropogenic carbon dioxide. Even if we were to take a leap of faith and say that we did think that there was an issue with carbon dioxide or a link between carbon dioxide and global warming, or climate change, as I like to call it now, still the amount that's produced by any aircraft is minuscule in the whole scheme of things, and the amount produced by private jets is even smaller than that. But you know, having read your book, it casts a lot of doubt on whether there is really any sort of definite link between anthropogenic activity and climate change.
Well, and of course, we haven't even gone to the elephant in the room, which is China.
Yeah.
if you are still concerned, you know, despite everything, despite like stuff like scientific evidence, if you're still concerned about the environmental damage that your private jet might be doing, just look at China and ask yourself, is China going to allow its economic growth to be held back by Western squeamishness about climate change? The Chinese have continued to build coal-fired power stations, supposedly the dirtiest of energy production, form of energy production, at a rate of knots.
Absolutely.
And their share of global CO2 emissions as a producer grows each year, their percentage of the pie. So whatever we do in the West anyway is going to be more than offset by China.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been to, quite apart from the climate change aspect of China, I've been to China, and I was in Shanghai, and everybody's riding on their bicycles with their pollution masks on. And I said to one of the guys at the airport, I said, where does all this smog come from? And he said, well, a lot of people here are so poor, they can't afford fuel for their home. A lot of people still have an open fire, and they'll burn anything they can get their hands on, you know, plastic bottles, anything that'll burn, a bit of car tire. And of course, all this stuff goes into smoke, turns into smog. So compared to what's going on over there, what's coming out of the back of your private jet or your Range Rover is really insignificant, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So, number one, the scientific evidence, the real world evidence, as opposed to the computer modelers' projections, does not show that man-made global warming is a problem. I mean, since we started coming out of the Little Ice Age in about the middle of the 19th century, the planet has warmed by roughly 1 degree centigrade, which is, when you think about it, less than the temperature increase between when you get out of bed and you have your first cup of coffee. It's nothing. There is no evidence that it's accelerating. There's no evidence that sea level rise, the rate of sea level rise has increased at all. It's been steadily rising for many hundreds of years. The environmental scare stories have been very much overdone by I suppose, a sort of lobbying sector of society. There's green activists. I think we are the first generation where people can boast about the fact that you put the word activist as their their job. It seems to become a thing,
very very topical at the moment.
Absolutely. And activists are about raising public concern by whatever means. They're about raising money for their cause, and what this does is it gives a very distorted picture, because if they had the appetite to fight back with counter arguments, which they don't, by the way, but if they did, oil companies would probably simply be shouted down as, well, you would say that because you're an oil company. Yep. But when you think about it, activists have an equal incentive for coming up with whatever manner of bullshit, because after all, what they're trying to do is raise awareness with extreme examples and persuade people to part with their cash to give to their cause.
Absolutely.
So all in all, I would say there's probably nothing I can say in a sentence or two that will persuade anyone who's spent the last 20 years being brainwashed by the popular narrative about climate change and environmentalism and sustainability and so on. There's nothing I can say that will just make you go, oh, wow. Well, now you've told that, I'm going to change my mind. But I think you owe it to yourself, and actually to future generations, actually, because I think environmentalism has become a very dangerous cause. I think it's diverted resources in unhelpful directions. Yeah. The money would be much, much better spent elsewhere. I think you owe it to yourself and your understanding of the world to do a bit of research, and what you will find is that what I say is true, that there is no evidence that global warming is anything to worry about, nor any of the concomitant disasters that we're promised will come. when you look into those, you find those too, that there's very little evidence that global warming, man-made global warming is a problem.
Absolutely right. James, thank you so much for your time. That's absolutely brilliant, fascinating stuff. And I would encourage everybody to read your book, Watermelons.
Thank you very much. Oh, and also, if they want to listen to my podcast, because I do a podcast as well.
Brilliant.
I'm sure
podcast.
Not as good as yours, Julian. But
I think yours is better.
Well, thank you. Well, I do talk to interesting people, and it's on Patreon. You can support me on Patreon. That's a good place to go. And then you get early access to my podcasts. Or if you want to suck it and see, you can find me on Apple, what is it called, iTunes and YouTube and stuff like that. Anyway, it's called The Delling Pod.
And
thanks again for having me on your show, Julian.
James, thank you so much for your time. It's been brilliant. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
James Dellingpole there, ladies and gentlemen. If you've not already read his brilliant book, Watermelons, and you'd like to, I'm running a little competition. The first 5 people to email me with the name of James's brilliant podcast will win a Kindle format copy of his book. Send your emails to podcast@julianstory.co.uk and I'll announce the names of the 5 lucky winners in the next podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you need an aircraft delivered, Julian Story Aviation is your number one choice. Specializing in King Airs, CJs, Citations, and the Learjet 40 and 45, we can help you with everything from factory acceptance or arranging a pre-buy inspection through to guidance on importation, tax implications, and ownership structures, as well as fairing your new aircraft. We have delivered dozens of aircraft worldwide, safely, on time, and on budget, and we would love to help you with yours. If you're buying or selling an aircraft, email fairing@julianstory.co.uk or call us on +44 1624 829 436.
So now that the coronavirus restrictions are starting to lift, many of us are thinking about going flying. For a lot of us, this will be our first flight in many months, so joining us now is Kathan Dudella, an instructor from Stars Fly Flying School at Elstree, who's going to tell us about some of the things that we should be thinking about before we jump into an aircraft and head for the sky. Kathan, hi.
Hello there, how are you?
I'm very well indeed, I'm very well. So you're an instructor at Stars Fly, which is at Elstree, and you're going to tell us a little bit about what people should be thinking about if they haven't flown for a while.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there are a few points that I'll be saying, and then we can just expand on that of what I mean by those points.
Okay.
So firstly, I would like to start off with the pilot itself.
Okay.
The pilot and his license. Okay. They're the two main important things.
Okay.
Because if you have a look at the pilot license, if it's not current, the pilot is basically flying illegal. So anything happens, he's not covered with the insurance.
Absolutely, he would be illegal and uninsured. Absolutely right. And I'm guessing if you haven't had your license out of your bag for a little while, it'd be very easy for maybe one of your ratings to be invalid or your medical to be invalid or something like that. A very good point. Okay.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. It happened to me actually, where my SAP expired and I didn't know about it until 3 months later.
Ah.
Luckily, I didn't do any flights in that time.
Easily forgotten.
But it's easily forgotten. Yeah. So that's a really main point, that your ratings are valid, you're current on the plane that you're about to fly, and just the license itself, basically.
Okay, so a little talk about currency. So let's imagine that you pull your license out of your bag and the rating's good and your medical's good. Legally, you can go flying, but can you carry passengers?
No. So if you haven't done free takeoffs and landings in the previous 90 days, you cannot take passengers.
That is absolutely correct. Yeah, absolutely. So it'd be very easy to think, it's a beautiful day, I'm allowed to go flying now, let's take my wife flying. You get to the airport, put your wife in the airplane, and if you haven't done those free takeoffs and landings in the last 90 days, your flight is illegal and uninsured. So yeah, another very good point.
Absolutely. Yeah, the next point I would like to focus on is, again, the pilot itself, but his medical fitness.
Yep.
Because, again, same as license ratings, medical expiry dates can easily be forgotten too.
This is true.
And as we know, as we get older, the renewal dates of the medical gets closer and closer.
Yes.
So we must make sure that we are still valid with medical. And not just the medical certificate. If you have the medical certificate in the hand, that doesn't mean that you're good to go flying. You also need to ask yourself, am I really fit to go flying?
Yeah.
Because if I've just been through a mental stress the day before, you should really not be flying.
Yep.
You should follow the checklist of I am safe.
Yep.
So illness, medical, and all those stuff. You should be thinking to yourself whether you are safe to fly the aircraft, not just a piece of paper certifying you.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And actually, I think a lot of people, even though they might be legally current, they may have a valid medical, maybe they're just not comfortable getting in the airplane without an instructor because they haven't flown for a while. And as I understand it, the rules permit solo flying, but there's still no dual flying for most private pilots. So, yeah, it's a very valid point, actually, Catherine, because, you know, a lot of people, they may be legal, but is it a good idea? Maybe they're a low-time pilot, maybe they're a bit rusty to begin with. If they haven't flown they might not have flown for a while over the winter. They could have been several months
Absolutely.
Away from flying. Probably not a great idea to just go jump in an airplane and blast off without a checkout with an instructor, which, as we all know, is not currently permitted. Yeah, very good
it's
point.
Not permitted
another
at the moment,
very
yeah.
good point.
Yeah. The next point I would like to consider is the aircraft itself. So the aircraft, if you own the aircraft and you haven't been flying, the aircraft will just be sitting there.
Yep.
You don't know what's been done to the aircraft, what birds have been doing to the aircraft, what the water has been done, what water has done onto the aircraft.
Yep.
So you must also make sure that you do a proper pre-flight check. Make sure you check for water in the fuel.
Yep.
Make sure that the cables and linkages are all good. Make sure that you have correct amount of oil, correct amount of lubrication.
Yep.
You have to check the plane inside and out before you actually go flying.
Absolutely right.
Because once you're in the air, that's it. So you also want to get down on the ground. So if you make sure and you find something on the ground, it will definitely help you back.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly way better to find something wrong before you've left the ground. It's not like a car. You can't just pull over in the hard shoulder and call the RAC.
Absolutely.
Once you're in the air, you're in the air. Another point.
Air.
Yeah. And as I think you said at the beginning, you don't know what the birds have been doing. You know, is there a bird's nest in the intake? You have no idea. Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah. The next thing I would like to express on is the NOTAMs.
Okay.
Because as skies open up again, there are still some parts of the skies that are still restricted. You can't go in them, or
Absolutely
they're very
right.
limited
yep.
to certain aircraft. And NOTAMs are really, really important. I mean, even in those normal days, and it's really important now because as skies open up, more and more people want to go flying. So there will be more people than before. Although the instructing is not permitted, but there will be more aircraft, more people that want to go flying than before.
Absolutely.
So NOTAMs is something that's definitely to be considered.
And I think actually NOTAMs are something that a lot of private pilots are pretty slack about checking. That's not all private pilots. Some of them are very, very, very diligent, and they check them very carefully before every flight. But I think there are a lot of pilots who just rock up at the airport, jump in the airplane, think, well, I'm only going to, I don't know, Headcorner. I've been there loads of times. They don't check their NOTAMs. And I think it's something that, as an instructor, probably you should maybe be impressing on your students just how important it is to check the NOTAMs, because I know so many people don't.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But you're right, at the moment, even more definitely. So. Plus, at the moment, a lot of airfields are closed at the moment. That's slowly changing, but a lot of them are closed, got funny opening hours. A very good point.
Yeah, that's it. So you don't want to end up getting stuck in at an airfield and not being able to take off again until they reopen.
Absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah, the next thing I'd like to consider is the airfield considerations.
Okay.
Some airfields, they might have certain procedures, such as no circuit permitting, or yep. You must fly this procedure, noise abatement procedure,
yep.
During this lockdown, because people are at home. So, yep. So it is definitely worth considering the airfield consideration, because they're trying their best to open up again.
Yep.
And if we don't comply with their rules...
You know, I think most airfields are trying to be as good a neighbour as they can be, and flying the correct noise abatement procedure definitely helps with that. I mean, you're an instructor at Elstree, and I know that at Elstree the procedures are probably a little more complicated than in a lot of places. So it's very important somewhere like that to be following the local procedures.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because last thing you want is people at home and just complaining about planes flying over their house every day. You don't want that. Because if you were at home and planes flying over your house every minute,
low
that
level
would annoy you as well.
So, absolutely right.
Yeah, absolutely. So we must also take care of the people around. Yeah. The next thing I would like to consider is actually transportation to and from the airfield.
Okay.
Although it's a very minor thing, but if you think about it, that to come to the airfield, you're actually, or some people take public transport. Where some people take car.
Absolutely. So actually, if you're going to go flying, the high risk part of your day out is probably, or it could be potentially, your transport to and from the airport.
Absolutely. Because last thing you want is, okay, you've just been flying, but you also caught the virus back home.
Yeah.
And you've just infected your family, which is the last thing you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And actually, potentially, if I know most operators, or most flying schools, have got some sort of sanitization program to sanitize aircraft in between people who are renting them. But even so, you know, you don't necessarily want to get on the underground, pick up something, and leave it in the airplane for the next person.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's my next point, which is to sanitize. Take care of yourself when you're flying, because once you're in the aircraft, it's just you in the aircraft. Maybe there's one of your family members with you. But you want to make sure that you minimize the risk of you getting infected or you infecting others whilst in the aircraft. So you must take hand sanitizer, hand gloves, and wear a special mask, which I heard the rumor that they're releasing for pilots.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I think those are the really important things to consider.
That's really good. Thank you very much indeed. So if anybody would like to learn to fly with Cathan or one of his colleagues, you can find him at Stars Fly Flying Club at Elstree. They have a website. It's www.starsfly.co.uk. Cathan, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
If you've enjoyed listening to this edition of the Julian Story Aviation Podcast, then don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Alexa, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Acast, and all the normal places that you would download your podcast from. If you have any comments about the podcast or have any great ideas for a podcast guest, drop me an email to podcast@julianstory.co.uk. Finally, now that the recreational flying restrictions have been partially relaxed, I hope that some of you may have been able to get up in the air. If you're one of those lucky ones, fly safe and keep it shiny side up.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.